Well, thank you, Melody. I wish you could say you got all your ability from me, but I know that's not true. Just thank my wife. Yeah. In the course of two other messages that I gave here, we read through the first three chapters of the book of Daniel, and we noticed the example that Daniel set. This is sort of like part three of a series that I was going through in the book of Daniel. But the first two, we noticed the example that Daniel set, and then the many lessons that he left for us today concerning how to live in a foreign culture, how to live in a pagan culture, how to live in a culture like Babylon, and certainly the culture around us is becoming like a modern day Babylon. Today I want to move on to chapter 4 and take a closer look at Babylon's ruler at that time, King Nebuchadnezzar. We learned lessons from the life of Daniel, but are there now lessons that we could learn from the life of Nebuchadnezzar, a very arrogant man who took tremendous pride in making Babylon great? And I thought we'd start by taking a look at his life chronologically, historically, add some historical context, and that's part of the reason I've got the handout. And I assume, Mr. Rogers, did I have enough of them for everybody? Did anybody not get one? I said, hand them out to anybody who can read or write. So, and I was, I'm a semi-retired math teacher, and so taking some lessons from some history teachers and how to present things to keep people involved. And so I thought, well, I'll try this here. I'll get out this note sheet. And I'll put in little blanks that you can fill in. Some of you, I think, can fill in the blanks without me going through some of this, but maybe it'll keep you a little bit more engaged. It seems to help in the social studies and history classes, so I'll see how well it works here. But we start off, so you've got your little Nebuchadnezzar chronology, and the dates that I've got given there are probably close, may not be exact, but they seem to match up with some of the things we did at Ambassador College years ago and some of what I could find in my research online. But 630 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar is born. He was the oldest son and eventual successor of his father, Nabopolassar. So you got a blank to fill in there. Nabopolassar is not mentioned in the Bible. And at the time Nebuchadnezzar was born, Nabopolassar appears to have been a minor or petty Chaldean chieftain in southern Babylonia when it was controlled by the Assyrian Empire, the weakening Assyrian Empire. And a little more context here. If you go back a century to 718 B.C., it was the Assyrians who had taken the northern kingdom of Israel into captivity and conquered their capital of Samaria. And 2 Kings 17, 3 through 6 is a reference on that. Well, what else was going on at that time? 630 B.C., King Josiah, good King Josiah of Judah, had been reigning for about 10 years. 626 B.C., King Ashurbanipal, not sure of the pronunciation there, so I'm certain that's probably not the way they pronounced it then, but anyway, King Ashurbanipal of Assyria died. And it gives Nabopolassar the opportunity to break away from Assyrian control and establish himself as the first king of the Chaldean dynasty of Babylon. This isn't recorded in the Bible either. Part of history, though. 615 B.C., Nabopolassar leads an army against the Assyrian city of Ashur, south of Assyria's capital of Nineveh, but he fails to seize it. The adventure doesn't succeed. We could note at this time the prophets Nahum, Jeremiah, Zephaniah, Habakkuk, Daniel, and Ezekiel were all alive at this time. And so they're all kind of contemporaries, although Nahum and Jeremiah were probably the oldest of them all, and Daniel and Ezekiel were very young, perhaps only 4 or 5 years old at this time. So that's about 615. Okay, next year, 614 B.C., the Assyrian city of Asshur does fall, but falls to the Medes. But the Medes share the spoils with Nabopolassar. And according to tradition, in order to bind a treaty between Nabopolassar and Cyaxares, king of the Medes at that time, Cyaxares gave his daughter, maybe it was his granddaughter, Amytis, in marriage to Nabopolassar's son, Nebuchadnezzar. Now, also, according to tradition, since the land of the Medes, Amytis was from, was green and lush and mountainous, she found that the flat, sun-baked terrain of Mesopotamia kind of depressing. So some years later, Nebuchadnezzar decided to relieve her depression by recreating her homeland through the building of a terraced artificial mountain with rooftop gardens, which were said to be one of the, somebody said seven, that's correct, seven wonders of the ancient world, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. Again, not mentioned in the Bible. In fact, as yet, they haven't found any archaeological evidence of the existence of the Hanging Gardens, but there's written evidence of it. After this treaty with Cyaxares, there was no fear of the mountain tribes, and Nabopolassar was able to compel some of the former vassals of Assyria to pay tribute to him instead. So Babylon gained a lot of wealth. Its army was well trained in the Assyrian methods of fighting, and eventually, in 612 B.C., allied with the Medes and the Scythians, Nabopolassar overthrows the Assyrians at Nineveh. Heard of Nineveh before? Nineveh. He destroys the city, as was prophesied by, there's a clue in the reference there, Nahum and Zephaniah. Nahum and Zephaniah had prophesied that this would happen. This conquest meant that the southern part of Assyria, the Assyrian Empire, fell to Nabopolassar, and what's left of it relocated to the northwest at Haran. Now, on the very back page of the note sheet, I drew in a map with various things that were relative to the sermon today, and I think you can find Haran, toward the center of the map, up toward the north there, along one of the branches off the Euphrates River. 610 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar, do a little math here, perhaps only 20 years old, appears for the first time as a military administrator. 609 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar is placed at the head of his father's armies, perhaps as a co-commander, and leads them north and west to do battle with what's left of the Assyrian Empire. There's still a little bit of the Assyrian Empire left. And you go to page 2 of your notes. This same year, Pharaoh Necho II of, where's the Pharaoh from? Egypt. Is leading his army to Carchemish in northern Syria. That's on the map as well. To join his allies, the fading Assyrian Empire. So Pharaoh Necho's got an alliance with the Assyrians. And he goes up there to battle against the Babylonian Empire, the surging Babylonians. But to do that, this required passing through the territory controlled by the kingdom of Judah. But Judah's king, Josiah, unwisely and stubbornly refused to let the Egyptians pass. And we can read about this in 2 Chronicles 35, verses 20 to 25. Might, if you got a Bible with a little bookmark, you want to put that in there. Or you could just listen to me read it. So we'll be doing some reading back and forth. But 2 Chronicles 35, verses 20 to 25. After all this, the previous verses, they referred to all the reforms and the good things that Josiah was doing. Because Josiah was actually one of the better kings of Judah, one of the good kings. When Josiah had set the temple in order, Necho, king of Egypt, came up to make war at Carchemish on the Euphrates in order to join his allies, the Assyrian Empire. And Josiah went out to engage him, but Necho sent messengers to him saying, "What if we do with each other, O king of Judah? I'm not coming against you today, but against the house with which I am at war. And God has ordered me to hurry. Stop for your own sake from interfering with God who is with me, so that he will not destroy you." So somehow, it sounds very prophetic here. You know, don't mess with me. I've got a message from God. However, Josiah would not turn away from him, but disguised himself in order to make war with him. Nor did he listen to the words of Necho from the mouth of God, but came to make war on the plain of Megiddo. There's a place on the sheet where you've got to fill in Megiddo. Met him at Megiddo. The archer shot King Josiah, and the king said to his servants, "Take me away, for I am badly wounded." So his servants took him out of the chariot and carried him in a second chariot, which he had, and brought him back to Jerusalem, where he died and was buried in the tombs of his fathers. All Judah and Jerusalem mourn for Josiah. Moving on to chapter 36, verse 1. Then the people of the land took Jehoahaz, the son of Josiah, and made him king in his father's place in Jerusalem. Jehoahaz was 23 years old when he became king, and he reigned 3 months. Only reigned 3 months in Jerusalem. It's still 609 B.C., and the city of Haran, a little to the east again of Carchemish, is the last Assyrian stronghold, and it falls to Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians. So apparently, Pharaoh Necho is unable to help the Assyrians. And he's probably irritated by that. And on his way back to Egypt, Necho stops in Judah, and he deposes Jehoahaz after only 3 months. And why is that? Well, basically the same reason God allowed other kings of Judah removed. Turn over to 2 Kings. And keep your bookmark in Chronicles there. But 2 Kings, if you're going through the Bible here. Or again, you could listen to me read through it. We'll be going to 2 Kings 23, verse 31. If you're using your Bible, you can put a bookmark there too. Jehoahaz was 23 years old when he became king, and he reigned only 3 months in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. Not the Jeremiah that wrote the book of Jeremiah. And he did evil. That's why he was removed. He did evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all his fathers had done. Verse 33, now Pharaoh Necho put him in prison, at least for a little while, at Riblah. And that's on the map. It's up north of Jerusalem, in the land or near the city of Hamath, about 200 miles north of Jerusalem. That he might not reign in Jerusalem. And he imposed on the land a tribute of 100 talents of silver and a talent of gold. And so Judah becomes a vassal of Egypt here. Then Pharaoh Necho made Eliakim, the son of Josiah, king in the place of his father, Josiah, and changed his name to Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim. And Pharaoh took Jehoahaz away from Riblah then, and went back to Egypt. And Jehoahaz died there in Egypt. So Egypt is in control of Judah and some of the regions to the north of it. However, now we come to the year 606 B.C., and it's time we could go over to Daniel. Daniel 1:1. Nabopolassar seems to be ailing, and Nebuchadnezzar, apparently a co-ruler with his father, is poised to gain control of Judah, 606. So Daniel 1:1, in the third year, so here's one of the time markers that helps us place the time here, in the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, again, this is the son of Josiah, who used to be called Eliakim, before Necho changed his name. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. 606 here. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles of the house of God, which he, that is Nebuchadnezzar, carried into the land of Shinar, referring to the geographic area of Babylon, carried it back to Babylon, to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. So now Babylon, and not Egypt, has control of Judah. And we see a lot of wealth and the first group of captives being taken from Jerusalem to Babylon. I'm going to skip down Daniel 1, verse 6. So now from among those of the sons of Judah were... probably fill these in on your own. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them, verse 7, the chief of the eunuchs gave the names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. And it's likely that Daniel and his friends were about 15 years old at this time. So now we come to 605 B.C. Because of his ailments, Nabopolassar leaves the army entirely at the command of Nebuchadnezzar and returns to Babylon. So the same year, 605, Pharaoh Necho again invades the territory of Judah and goes north to Carchemish, to try to gain a share of the old Assyrian Empire. But Nebuchadnezzar soundly defeats him at Carchemish, and the reference that is referenced in the Bible, Jeremiah 46:2. Later in 605 B.C., some references say it happened in August, Nabopolassar dies. Reading from one historical account, Nabopolassar represented himself as a pious man who rose from humble origins to kingship. But he referred with great pride to his victory over Assyria. He started various construction projects at Babylon and elsewhere, which were completed by his son Nebuchadnezzar. These included the improvement of the irrigation system around Babylon, as well as beautifying the city itself. So Nebuchadnezzar returns to Babylon and within 3 weeks takes full control as king. So now he's about 25 years old. He orders all the kings of the western territories, which includes Judah, to pay tribute. Gets them to pay tribute. So he's inherited tremendous wealth from his father, lots of land, lots of power, all at a very young age. We'll notice 2 Kings 24. Verses 1 through 4, 2 Kings 24, 1 through 4. In his days, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up and Jehoiakim became his vassal for 3 years. His vassal for 3 years. Then he turned and rebelled against him. Verse 2, and the Lord sent against him raiding bands of Chaldeans, bands of Syrians, bands of Moabites, and bands of the people of Ammon. He sent them against Judah to destroy it, according to the word of the Lord, which he had spoken by the servants of prophets, by his servants' prophets. Surely at the command of the Lord, this came upon Judah to remove them from his sight because of the sins of Manasseh, according to all that he had done, and also because of the innocent blood that he had shed. For he had filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, which the Lord would not pardon. So, kind of going back to the note sheet, 605 B.C., so Judah becomes a vassal state. Jehoiakim begins paying tribute, and he does so for 3 years. Just kind of review that. And we come to 604, 603, somewhere in there, B.C. And this is where we can place the second chapter of Daniel. As it tells in the second chapter of Daniel, don't necessarily need to turn there, that in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, that's the time marker here, Daniel, and during that time, Daniel describes and interprets Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the great image, the great statue, where the head was of gold, and then the arms and the middle part of silver, and then the bronze and the iron, and that prophetic image. So that's 604, 603 B.C. That's where that fit in. And that's when Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are promoted to high positions in the Babylonian government. 602 B.C., Jehoiakim rebels and stops paying tribute to Babylon. He's going to rely on an alliance with Egypt. He's going to rely on Egypt for protection. But it appears that at some point after this, Nebuchadnezzar moves against Egypt and intimidates the Egyptians into staying within their own borders. And this is referred to in 2 Kings 24, verse 7. Got your bookmark there if you want to listen to me read it. It tells us that, and the king of Egypt did not come out of his land anymore. He got intimidated, for the king of Babylon had taken all that belonged to the king of Egypt, from the brook of Egypt to the river Euphrates. So Babylon's in control of all that now. So Jehoiakim has no protection from Egypt, and by 598 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar comes against Jerusalem again. And we'll go to 2 Chronicles 36, verses 5 through 8. And we can read, Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord his God. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up against him and bound him in bronze fetters to carry him off to Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar, verse 7, also carried off some of the articles of the house of the Lord to Babylon and put them in the temple at Babylon. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim, the abominations which he did, and what was found against him, indeed, they are written in the book of the kings of Israel and Judah. Then Jehoiachin, his son, or Josiah's grandson, reigned in his place. 3 months later, and it's 597 B.C., and we'll refer to 2 Kings 24, verse 8, Jehoiachin was 18 years old when he became king. A lot of these people became kings at awfully young ages. 18 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 3 months. So you've got one reigning for 3 months, 11 years, and now another one reigns only 3 months. His mother's name was Nehushta, the daughter of Elnathan of Jerusalem, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father had done. Verse 10, at that time, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up against Jerusalem, and the city was besieged again. And Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came against the city as his servants were besieging it. Then Jehoiachin, the king of Judah, his mother, his servants, his princes, and his officers went out to the king of Babylon. And the king of Babylon, in the 8th year of his reign, again another time marker here that helps us place these things, took him prisoner. And according to what one dictionary called the Babylonian Chronicle, this occurred on the second day of Adar, or they say March 16th, 597 B.C. So I got some corroboration on the dating there. Still in 2 Kings 24, continuing verse 13, and he, Nebuchadnezzar, carried out from there all the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house. And he cut in pieces all the articles of gold which Solomon, king of Israel, made in the temple of the Lord, as the Lord had said. Also, he carried into captivity all Jerusalem, all the captains, all the mighty men of valor, 10,000 captives, and all the craftsmen and the smiths. None remained except the poorest people of the land. Took all the skilled people, all the people that could do things for Babylon. And he carried Jehoiachin captive to Babylon, the king's mother, the king's wives, his officers, and the mighty of the land he carried into captivity from Jerusalem to Babylon. All the valiant men, 7,000, and craftsmen and smiths, 1,000 all who were strong and fit for war, these the king of Babylon brought captive to Babylon. So we can stop here just a little bit to recap the note sheet. Again, 597 B.C., Jehoiachin is only 18 years old. After only 3 months, Nebuchadnezzar besieges Jerusalem, carries away tremendous material wealth and the 10,000 captives, including the prophet Ezekiel. Ezekiel is taken at this time, probably in his mid-20s. That's shown again by some time markers referred to in Ezekiel 33, verse 21 and 41. Let's see, did I have that on the note sheet? Yeah, okay. 2 Kings 24, verse 17. Then the king of Babylon made Mattaniah, Jehoiachin's uncle, king in his place and changed his name to Zedekiah. So Zedekiah, or originally Mattaniah, was a brother of Jehoiachin's father, Jehoiakim, who was Eliakim. I had a hard time keeping all these names straight. Again, both Jehoiakim and Zedekiah were sons of Josiah. Verse 18, Zedekiah was 21 years old when he became king, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. As a math teacher, I noticed some of these numerical profiles. One rules 3 months, and then the next one 11 years, and the next one rules 3 months, and then the next one 11 years. And is that significant? Probably not, but 311, 311, oh, okay. It means something to a math teacher, I guess. Let's see. He reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Hamutal, daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. He also did evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that Jehoiakim had done. For because of the anger of the Lord, this happened to Jerusalem and Judah, that he finally cast them out from his presence. Then Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. So 588 B.C., 2 Kings 25, verse 1. Now it came to pass in the ninth year of his reign, that is in the ninth year of Zedekiah's reign, On the 10th month, on the 10th day of the month, that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and all his army came against Jerusalem and encamped against it, and they built a siege wall against it all around. So the city was besieged until the 11th year of King Zedekiah. So the siege lasts for 11 minus 9 is 2 years. Verse 3, by the 9th day of the 4th month, the famine after the siege becomes so severe that the city that there was no food for the people of the land. And the prophet Jeremiah is active at this time in Jerusalem. And you could read some of the occurrences here in Jeremiah. We won't do that today, though. 586 B.C., verse 4. Then the city wall was broken through, and all the men of war fled at night by way of the gate between two walls, which was by the king's garden, even though the Chaldeans, that is the Babylonians, were still encamped all around against the city. And the king, that is Zedekiah, went by way of the plain. So he's trying to escape through the plain here. Verse 5, but the army of the Chaldeans pursued the king, and they overtook him in the plains of Jericho. All his army was scattered from him. Verse 6, so they took the king and brought him up to the king of Babylon at Riblah. Again, notice the map, or maybe you remember where it was, up north of Jerusalem. And they pronounced judgment on him. Verse 7, then they killed the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes and put out the eyes of Zedekiah. They bound him with bronze fetters and took him to Babylon. Verse 8, in the 5th month, on the 7th day of the month, which was the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, servant of the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem. He burned the house of the Lord, the temples destroyed them, and the king's house, and all the houses of Jerusalem, that is, all the houses of the great, he burned with fire. The city is burned. Verse 10, and all the army of the Chaldeans who were with the captain of the guard broke down the walls of Jerusalem all around. And that's kind of significant for later on, the days of Zerubbabel. I'm going to skip to verse 17. The height of one pillar was 18 cubits. Let's see, no. Skip further down than that. Maybe verse 18. But anyway, in those verses from 11 to 17, anything left of value is broken, or that is anything that was left of value that wasn't broken was taken to Babylon. Verse 18, and the captain of the guard took Sariah, the chief priest, Zephaniah, again, not the Zephaniah, the prophet, the second priest, and three doorkeepers. He also took out of the city an officer who had charge of the men of war, five of the king's close associates who were found in the city, the chief recruiting officer of the army who mustered the people of the land, and 60 men of the people of the land who were found in the city. So Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, took these and brought them to the king of Babylon at Riblah, brought them before Nebuchadnezzar. So what happens there? Verse 21, then the king of Babylon struck them and put them to death at Riblah in the land of Hamath. Thus, Judah was carried away captive from its own land. So we've got another example of Nebuchadnezzar's cruelty at this time. And we might ask, okay, now where does the third chapter of Daniel fit in? And that is, where did Nebuchadnezzar set up this great golden image that everyone was commanded to bow down to or else be thrown into the fiery furnace? When did this happen? Well, according to Haley's Bible Handbook, the Septuagint, which is a Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament, puts the date as the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, the same year that Jerusalem was burned, which was 586 B.C. So 586 B.C. is where the third chapter of Daniel fits in. The great golden image was set up that people were required to bow down to. Using other historical records, Haley's Bible Handbook says that Nebuchadnezzar, from 585 to 573 B.C., besieged Tyre for 13 years. Tyre's on the map there, on the coast. 582 B.C., he invaded and he plundered Moab, Ammon, Edom, and Lebanon. 581 B.C., he again took captives from Judah, back and forth from Judah many times. 571 B.C., he invaded Egypt. And at this point, we can ask, where does the fourth chapter of Daniel fit in? Well, we haven't got there yet. In other words, when does Nebuchadnezzar have this troubling dream that we'll get to about a great tree that gets chopped down? Well, we don't have any definite time markers for this, but it seems most likely that it would have been sometime after Nebuchadnezzar's last military campaign, which is in 571 B.C. Why is that? Well, as we'll notice a little bit here, the tone in Daniel chapter 4 seems to present Nebuchadnezzar as having changed. I mean, through the first three chapters, Nebuchadnezzar changes a little bit. Of course, he sort of backslides at times. But there's a definite change in chapter 4. And he seems to have a different attitude than a man of violent military conquests. So between the years of 571 B.C. and 561 B.C. is probably where the fourth chapter of Daniel fits in. What's the significance of the year 561 B.C.? That appears to be the year that Nebuchadnezzar dies, at about age 69. So Nebuchadnezzar had ruled Babylon for close to 43 years. He was arrogant, he was egotistical, and at times a very cruel leader. As a military commander, he appears to have been quite brilliant. But the archaeological record shows that he also took great pride in his building accomplishments. And great pride, again, making Babylon great. He had massive building accomplishments. They included canals, aqueducts, reservoirs. He also appears to have built or restored a lot of the cities in the region and temples in the country. Nebuchadnezzar was the greatest king of a very prosperous and very powerful empire at that time, the great Babylonian Empire, and the most powerful nation on the earth at that time. So now, after that historical background, we are posed to look at Daniel chapter 4. See if we can get some lessons out of that. So go to chapter 4. Daniel 4, verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar the king, to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth. Nebuchadnezzar is doing the talking, and it appears that Daniel might be doing the dictation here. Peace be multiplied to you. Nebuchadnezzar, talking about peace. Verse 2. I thought it good to declare the signs and wonders the Most High God has worked for me. So he's acknowledging the true God. Verse 3, how great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. And you wonder now, does he have something of an understanding of God's plan at this time? I think Mr. Herbert Armstrong used to speculate about that. He wondered. And his dominion is from generation to generation. So Nebuchadnezzar has changed. And what's happened to bring it about? Well, he begins to explain. Verse 4. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts on my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Therefore, I issued a decree to bring all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known to me the interpretation of the dream. Then the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers came in. It seems to be a little if he really had more of an understanding of God, would he have really gone to the astrologers and the soothsayers? So he brings them in. I told them the dream that they did not make known, but they did not make known to me the interpretation. Verse 8, but at last Daniel came before me. His name is Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God. And maybe he's referring to my former God. To the name of my God, in him, Daniel, that is the spirit of the holy God. And I told the dream before him, saying, verse 9, Belteshazzar, chief of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy God is in you and no secret troubles you, explain to me the visions of my dream that I have seen and its interpretation. These were the visions in my head while on my bed. And so he goes on to explain. I was looking, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and its height was great. The tree grew and became strong. Its height reached to the heavens, and it could be seen to the ends of all the earth. Its leaves were lovely, its fruit abundant, and in it was food for all. The beasts of the field found shade under it. The birds of the heavens dwelt in its branches, and all flesh was fed from it. I saw in the visions of my head while on my bed, and there was a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven. He cried aloud and said thus, chop down the tree and cut off its branches, strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the beasts get out from under it and the birds from its branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump and roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze, and the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of heaven. Let him graze with the beasts on the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from that of a man. Let him be given the heart of a beast, and let seven times pass over him. This decision is by the decree of the watchers, and the sentence by the word of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men. He gives it to whomever he will and sets over it the lowest of men. Verse 18. This dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now you, Belteshazzar, Daniel, declare its interpretation, since all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known to me the interpretation. But you are able, for the spirit of the holy God is in you. You've proved yourself in the past. Verse 19, then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for a time, and his thoughts troubled him. Daniel seems a little hesitant here. So the king spoke and said, Belteshazzar, do not let the dream or its interpretation trouble you. Belteshazzar answered and said, my lord, may the dream concern those who hate you, and its interpretation concern your enemies. The tree that you saw, which grew and became strong, whose height reached to the heavens, and which could be seen by all the earth, whose leaves were lovely and its fruit abundant, and which was food for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and in whose branches the birds of the heaven had their home, It's you, O King, you who have grown and become strong. For your greatness has grown and reaches to the heavens and your dominion to the end of the earth. And inasmuch as the king saw a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven and saying, chop down the tree and destroy it, but leave its stump and roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze in the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let him graze with the beasts of the field till seven times pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king. Verse 25, they shall drive you from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you, probably 7 years, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. God wants you to understand that the power and the authority that you've come by, Nebuchadnezzar, comes from him. It comes from God. It's not of your own doing. Verse 26, and inasmuch as they gave the command to leave the stump and the roots of the tree, your kingdom shall be assured to you after you come to know that heaven rules. Therefore, O king, let my advice be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by being righteous, and your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. And perhaps there may be a lengthening of your prosperity. So Daniel gives him some advice. Stop sinning. Be righteous. Stop being so callous. Show some humility. Have some mercy. Show some feelings for the poor. And then maybe this won't happen to you. Well, verse 28. But all this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. It appears, though, that he was given a year to show that he'd taken Daniel's advice, as we see here, verse 29. At the end of 12 months, he was walking about the royal palace of Babylon. The king spoke, saying, is not this great Babylon that I have built? I've made it great for a royal dwelling of my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty. Doesn't sound very humble. Verse 31. While the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven. King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you, and they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen, and seven times shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of heaven and gives it to whomever he chooses. That very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. Verse 34. And at the end of the time, probably at the end of 7 years, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me. And I blessed the Most High, and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And again, you begin to wonder if he has some understanding there. Verse 35, all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to his will in the army of heaven. And among the inhabitants of the earth, no one can restrain his hand or say to him, what have you done? At the same time, my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and splendor returned to me. My counselors and nobles resorted to me again. I was restored to my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways justice. And notice this last sentence here. And those who walk in pride, he is able to put down. And this is the last we hear of Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel, except there's a reference, I think, at chapter 5. He's referred to as an ancestor of one of the later kings, Belshazzar, some 20 or more years later after he's died. But a key point in chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar seems to acknowledge that God has given him a big-time lesson in humility. We know from Jesus' instruction that humility is a key component of leadership. Leaders are in the position that they're in for the purpose of service, serving other people. They're not to exalt themselves or enrich themselves. Nebuchadnezzar had been ruthless, he'd been callous, he'd been arrogant, cruel, very vain. But he seems to have really changed. But it took some doing and came over a long period of time. God seems to have been patient with him. We might remember that through the first four chapters of Daniel, God gave Nebuchadnezzar successive, progressively more drastic or severe opportunities to change his ways. And Nebuchadnezzar does make some changes through those first three chapters, but over time he seems to revert back. You go back to Daniel 2, and you think of the miraculous way that Daniel not only told Nebuchadnezzar what his dream was, but he also interpreted that dream. And then he said, your God is the God of gods. Like saying, well, your God is the best one. Some progress. Daniel 3 is about 18 years later. There's the miracle of the fiery furnace. You know, bow down before the idol or get thrown in the fiery furnace. And Nebuchadnezzar blesses God after that. And he commands that, well, yeah, your God is the best, but no other God should be worshipped. I think that was verses 28 and 29 of Daniel 3. Yeah, your God is the best one, and we're not going to allow you any other God to be worshipped. So there's some progress. And then Daniel 4, perhaps another 14 years later, or maybe more, Nebuchadnezzar is warned by Daniel. And then a year after that warning, he suffers the consequences of not heeding Daniel's advice, not heeding the warning. But this time, Nebuchadnezzar makes no mention of other gods, other than that point in verse 8 where he uses the statement how many years before he'd changed Daniel's name for some reason related to the God that he worshipped at that time. So we see that God can change the heart of a ruler, and when it benefits his people or helps him carry out his purpose, God can humble the world's most powerful, ruthless, arrogant leaders. And it's very apparent by chapter 4. More things to notice. Nebuchadnezzar could have avoided a lot of difficulties. He just responded more quickly, more wholeheartedly to his opportunities to change. He'd humbled himself earlier. Of course, that's a lesson for us. Be humble enough to heed the advice of maybe wise and trusted friends. Respond to the advice. Maybe make changes that we're told to make, and make them immediately. Don't wait. Don't wait to the point where before we eventually have to suffer the consequences that maybe come upon us because of maybe some pattern of behavior that we're in and we've been advised to stop. Change can be difficult. Change can be painful. But it's important to be able to humble ourselves now so that God doesn't have to humble us and bring us more pain or use pain to bring things to our attention and humble us in the future. Perhaps that's the main overall lesson from chapter 4. Humility needs to be a vital component of our character. Lots of lessons for us in the first four chapters of Daniel. So let's heed those lessons. And let's continually strive to be humble servants of God now as we prepare humbly and righteously to serve as kings and priests in God's coming kingdom in the future.